about, that will ever be talked about. I don't care what you're saying. Some people might come to me and say, you're crazy, you're freaking nuts. There's no other topic that you could think of that I would want to talk about today. I don't care if you're telling me your foot fell off. Okay, your foot fell off. I'm sorry, but I don't want to talk about it today. Do you want to talk about you won $1 million? Whoop-de-freaking-do, you won $1 million. But I don't want to talk about that today. Today, I want to talk about one of the best shows that I am such a big fan of. This show has done so much for me in a big proportional way that I can't begin to even say how much I love this show. This show is... If you can't tell because your ears have shut off in the middle of this podcast, you are listening to It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia with, of course, the one, the only, Melissa LaToya, a.k.a. Jersey S. And I call myself Jersey S because I was born in Newark, New Jersey, but raised in South New Jersey. And I love that shit to the day I die. That is my jam. But I want to talk about something else. What do I want to talk about? What am I ready to just go all in about? If you cannot tell by the theme song that played before I started talking, I'm talking about one of my favorite shows, The Office. This show is the motherfudging jam on the peanut butter with the nice chunky peanuts with the bread. It is my jam. And the reason why it's my jam is because Michael Scott, played by Steve Carell, he is my fucking dude. Like, I love this guy. You cannot begin to even begin to talk about The Office without going into the character that Steve Carell played. How he was such a big influence on the show, even when he was not on it the last two seasons, because how he came on the show set the tone. You know, that's what she said. That is an epic catchphrase. Like, when you say that's what she said, you better damn know who made that shit famous. Michael Scott. Okay? He is my freaking dude. Like, he is so unaware of how unaware he is. It is ridiculous. But he somehow became the underdog for the show. Everybody was rooting for him. Everybody. I was rooting for him. I wanted him to find love, and I was so glad when he did. I love how he makes the facial expressions, and he cannot stand Toby. I love that relationship, because it actually makes the show even better. Because even though Toby is a nice guy and he's just doing his job as an HR representative, it gives you a villain. Not even a bad villain. Not a villain that you hate. Just the villain that annoys you. Everybody has that person at their job who they don't necessarily hate because they're like an evil person, but because their job is to be a stickler, and they stick to being a freaking stickler. Like, Toby is kind of the boss of Michael Scott. He's the one who reins him in when he has all these crazy parties and says all these crazy things. But Michael Scott is just the guy who gets it done. You know, I remember when I fell in love with the show, and it was the first episode. The first episode when I saw Michael Scott and how he was trying to explain how he's the best at sales, and Jim comes in, aka John Krasinski. I can't say his name right. I'm not even going to pretend I can. And he's just sitting there talking to him and telling him how it's done. And he doesn't even know. He's not even aware the first person, the person he's talking to on the phone that he's trying to sell this paper product to is a woman. He thinks it's a man. And, you know, to be fair, up north, we do sometimes have raspy voices. I don't know how raspy her voice was. She may have had a cold. She may have smoked a ton of cigarettes. She may have had a cold and smoked a ton of cigarettes and been short-winded. Who knows? Who cares? I don't care. Honestly, I don't care. It is what it is. It's in, it's in. That's what she said. But anywho, man, and this show wouldn't have been complete without my dude, Dwight Schrute, holding down the fort with Michael Scott. Let me explain to you how genius the role of Dwight Schrute. Technically, the role of Dwight Schrute was supposed to be played by John Krasinski, but he kept coming in, being persistent, and was like, yo, I need to be Jimbo. And that's what happened, and that's how we got James Halpert, a.k.a. Jim, a.k.a. Tuna. That's how we got him. But back to Dwight Kurt Schrute. Schrute Farms. I couldn't say it right, but Schrute. This dude, and I have to take a big gulp of water just to get into to Dwight, because he is something. He is something. Originally, when the show started in season one, Dwight was this single guy. And when you see him, you see how he is very tenacious. He's very odd, and he is very annoying, and that guy that you're like, oh my god, I can't stand you, you're freaking annoying. But as I watched the seasons and the episodes, I've watched the show probably 100 times front and back, because I love this show. I've even bought DVDs because I love this show that much. I really stumbled upon something. And I remember one time going onto the fan page and reading about somebody saying, and they had their own little type of thought process about Dwight. And they said, well, Dwight might possibly be, you know, the good guy in all this. And Pam and Jim may have been just the really bad ones because of the fact that they were always annoying Dwight. I get where they were coming from, and I do get it. But the one thing I have to say about Dwight, to defend his character, is that Dwight was a business god. He was. He really was a business god. Like, he was. This dude had Schrute Farms. He had like a bed and breakfast. He had like, he made furniture. He sold different types of meat. He was into real estate. Then eventually he owned like a piece of Dunder Mifflin, and then on top of that, he wound up being the manager. Like, when I say Dwight was a freaking genius, he was. No matter how crazy he was, he had to be that crazy. Like, he had to be that annoying, sitting in his car, listening to rock and roll, air guitar, you know what I'm saying? He had to, like, look down on certain people because of how things were going, and he had to be so in deep with Battlestar Galactica and his thoughts and his train of thought, because sometimes when you're a freaking genius, you're just so far out there that nobody understands you. I honestly believe that. I honestly believe that that's what happened in the case of Dwight Schrute. He was so far ahead of his time that nobody could see him. But he was a bit of an asshole and annoying sometimes. And sometimes he was just weird. He was just weird. Like, when he thought Jim was a vampire, that was crazy. Or when Buddy got with Angela. Like, I don't understand. What was it? Season 2, he got with Angela. And at first, it was like, oh, it's cute. But then it's like they were always being private. And at first, I thought they were freaking nuts. Like, I thought they were crazy. But I realized something. That's kind of how you need to be in a business. Because, number one, a lot of businesses don't want you to be dating your coworkers, because you know it can end on bad terms, and they had the HR situation, and they didn't want to disclose it. But I also thought it was good because it gave us a chance to really see the secret side of Dwight, where he was really sweet, compassionate, caring, and he wasn't just this tight and tight ass in the business, all about the paper. And so that's why I loved how the story unfolded with Dwight and Angela, and how they had, you know, this mysterious breakup, and when Andy Bernard, aka the Nard Diggity Dog, aka my dude from who went to God, what am I? See, this is the problem. This is what I know. I know he went to, what is it? God, I know this by heart. Is it Stanford? I know it was in Ithaca, New York. And he was like, ever heard of it? It's in Ithaca, New York. And I love that part. Those of you who hear this podcast, my brain is frozen, but I love this show so much. If you can say, tell me the exact college that the Nard Dog went to, aka Andy Bernard, guys, I would fully appreciate that. Hit me up on my Facebook, It's Always Sunny in Streamadelphia, and just leave a comment, message me, and I will be greatly, greatly influenced by you and thankful to you. And you might be able to tell me the next show that you want me to watch or stream, or if I have streamed on it, talk about in our next episode of It's Always Sunny in Streamadelphia. I would be greatly appreciative to you for that. And I might even let you come up with the question of the dizzle. Anywho, we're getting back. Let's get back with it. Now, we can't forget, since we're talking about Dwight Schrute and Andy Bernard, we're going to get on to Andy Bernard for a little bit. And then we're going to get on to my girl, Angela. Andy Bernard, the Nard Diggity Dog. I don't know how to explain him. When he originally came in, he came in like season 3. And he was originally working at the Stanford branch with Jim, and he's pretty much a kiss ass. Like, he was always reminiscent on his past times to make him sound better. He was spoiled. He lived like a life of, you know, he was a rich kid. He was really braggy, and he was always trying to prove to everyone that he was good enough because of how his parents raised him and basically took everything away that they gave to him at the same time. You know, they always treated him like he was less than. So he was always trying to prove to other people that he was good enough. The whole show was on it. But the real reality is he was always searching for himself. He was always searching for himself, searching for that love, searching for that epic moment to feel the good old days, when the reality was he was really at his best when he was working at Scranton Dunder Mifflin. It just was. Really, it was. Scranton Dunder Mifflin, and even, you know, when he was working at Dunder Mifflin at Stanford. But I really think the Scranton branch was the best branch for him because of everything that he did there. You know, it wasn't a competition. It was fully a family. He blossomed with a relationship with Angela. He blossomed with a relationship with Aaron. It was just a real great thing. When you get into Angela, Angela is the queen bee. She is the just that one. She don't play no games. She didn't play any games with Dwight. Yes. I had to really section this off because I had a little bloopers on my Angela part. But yes, let's get back to Angela. Angela. Let's get back into Angela. Angela is, I wanted to say a female Dwight, but she's not. She's definitely not a female Dwight. Like, Angela is like, She's a woman who prides herself in being old school, dignified, and private. And she also wants to be boastful. She also wants to be the female that everyone is jealous of. She wants to be, you know, just everything. I mean, when she was with Dwight, she's really quiet. When she was with Andy, she was, I would like to say, she was quiet, but Andy wanted to be seen, so it forced her to do certain things that she wouldn't have did if she was with Dwight. And she was really in love with Dwight. She wasn't in love with Andy as much as she was in love with Dwight. Like, she was really in love with Dwight. She's in love with Dwight. Then she wound up being with the senator. And the senator, she was happy about that relationship because she got to feel like she was getting the attention that she wasn't getting from Dwight. Especially when they went through what they went through with the breakup and everything, that it kind of became awkward, you know, with her cheating on Dwight and Andy. And then the relationship became crazy when they had a contract to make a baby, a sex contract and a contract to make a baby. It was crazy. It was crazy. So they had that contract and things became awkward. And then during that, you know, Dwight had a heyday. You know, he had a hayfield in the middle of his job or whatever, and then he decided, okay, you know, I'm just not gonna be bothered with Angela. And so Angela, you know, had some issues with that, and she wound up being the senator, and then went from there, and then they wound up getting married and having a baby. And come to find out, the senator was having an affair with Oscar for a long time, and Oscar knew he was gay for a long time. He had an affair with a lot of people for a long time. It was bananas. B-A-N-A-N-A-S. It's bananas. B-A-N-A-N-A-S. If you watch The Office, you know my girl Kelly Kapoor Dizzle, Kelly Caprizi, Kelly Kells killed her role, a.k.a. in real life, Mindy Kaling. Okay? I can't believe how critical her role is in that show. Like, it really is critical. Because she's like the relief for certain situations when they get too real. I mean, her issues with Ryan are so crazy. But they're so real. Because, like, when you first meet her, you think she's just this real sweet, quiet, standoffish female. But as her role becomes bigger, you see that she is nothing but a chatterbox, hungry for attention, and she's hungry to blow up. And she does. She becomes this beast. She was always a queen, but she truly became like this real boss queen. Like, she called herself the boss bee. You know what I mean? She became that role by working her way up to the top. You know what I'm saying? Doing what she had to do to get to where she needed to get. And she still had this weakness, though. Even when she found this really good guy and she got settled down, she became an executive at the company, she still had this weakness for Ryan. And she wound up She wound up getting with Ryan in the last episode. Like, for real, for real. Like, he was supposed to be, like, this perfect man now because he had went through all these changes after she had got with this guy who was a doctor. And so she breaks up with the doctor at the wedding, runs off with Ryan. Not to mention, Ryan has a baby with this other woman, or he's taking care of a baby, forget how it goes. And Ryan winds up leaving the baby with the doctor. It was just a lot. It was a lot. It was a lot. And then the baby winds up getting taken care of by my girl Nelly. It was just a whole thing in this show. Like, there are so many things in this show that happens that literally, it's ridiculous. I mean, all the new characters you fall in love with, all the old characters you've been in love with, all the careers that have became because of it, and then you can't forget, like, with through all this madness, you can't forget about my girl, Pam Morgan Beasley, aka Pam Beasley, aka Pamela Morgan Beasley, aka Beasley, aka Pam Halpert. Well, it wouldn't be It's Always Sunny in Streamadelphia if we didn't get some of the meat and potatoes of the show. Getting into Pam Beasley and Jimbo. Okay. Pamela Morgan Beasley, in the beginning of the show, I'm not even gonna lie, I automatically fell in love with her and Jim's character. One of the reasons why I fell in love with Pam's character, and I'm pretty sure many women have fell in love with her character, or many people who can identify with this feeling, is she was the underdog. And what I mean by that is she was one of the popular kids, but at the same time, in her own personal life, she was kind of the underdog. You know, she had some issues going on with her relationship when the show first started with Roy. Roy was not treating her right. She had been with Roy for years, like a decade, I want to say, for a long time. And, you know, she was suffering with the issues of not being able to do anything that she really wanted to do with her career. And she felt stuck as being a receptionist. She felt unfulfilled in her life and her career. And she was in love with Jim, you know. And it was just like a whole thing. But she felt like she had to stick it through because she was engaged to Roy for like 3-4 years. And so one day, I would like to assume, when Jim came through into her life, she started making different changes and started wanting to hang out more and started wanting to do more things. Well, in the show, she was always tight with Jim. She would always make jokes. She would always pull pranks on Dwight. And there were moments where she could tell she was getting too close to Jim, like maybe Angela would point it out or people would notice that she was really tight with Jim and how much time Jim would spend at reception, which was where where Pam's position was in the office. And he spent so much time there that sometimes she might have noticed that it was getting a little inappropriate, especially when Roy would come around and he would feel like, what the heck? But she knew that being around Jim, even with the issues that were going on, she was becoming more free. She was letting herself allow herself to be a better person. And I think that's the best part about this show, is that every character grew. Every last one of the characters grew, which, I mean, in all shows they do, but they grew in a way where you could really see this happening in real life. Like, Pam went from being with Roy to having this little thing with Jim, to her and Roy breaking up and Jim going away and then coming back, because he was working in the same company, and companies do have mergers and let, you know, different parts of their company go, just to save money because maybe the company is not doing as well. And he came back and he still had feelings for Pam. Like, that never went away. He was in love with her, point blank. But he was in a relationship. And, like, real things happen. People move on. Things happen. And then somehow, you know, it became very apparent to his current girlfriend at that time, which was Karen Filippelli, that he's in love with Pam. I mean, everybody knew he was in love with Pam. Everybody knew he was in love with Pam, you know? And they wound up becoming this thing once Karen and him broke up. And it was an epic moment. It really was an epic moment when Jim finally decided to let go of Karen and try again. Because Pam had been battling that whole season with letting go, speaking her truth, being clear, being honest, being direct, going for what she wants. And I mean, that's what we do in life. Hell, I'm doing that right now. And it took a long process. And she hated the fact that it took that long. But she actually needed that to happen so she could appreciate the value that she had and the value that her relationship and Jim had. The epic moment came when there was this position that Michael Scott thought he was going to get to be, you know, the big manager. And Jim wound up interviewing for it too, and so did Karen. And the goal was Karen and Jim were supposed to move to New York, forget about the past with Pam, and start fresh, because Karen was intimidated by Pam. She knew that they weren't going to make it in Scranton. They just weren't. And they were better being someplace else. That way he wouldn't have that constant reminder of how much he was in love with Pam. Even when they left, he was still in love with Pam. Like, even when he left to go to the other branch, he was still in love with Pam. Well, Pam, I don't know why I keep calling her Plam or Pan. A little tongue-tied. But yeah, he was still in love with her. And he started off seemingly like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be with you. But what happened was he wound up having this wonderful night that they couldn't forget. And he broke up with her. And he didn't accept the position. And he came back from New York because he already felt like he wanted to be with Pam. They already had this conversation the night before, him and Karen, about how it was supposed to be when they got to New York and how he needed to leave him alone. And he already had this big epic moment with Pam like a week before then, about like on beach night, about, you know, how she misses their friendship and it had been awkward since he came back to the new branch. And it was this big buildup. And then next thing you know, Pam is like, I hope he gets the job in New York. I hope Karen gets it, you know, blah, 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 blah. And she's opening up, you know, she's opening up because, you know, this is technically supposed to be a documentary. It's not a real documentary. It's a TV show, but it's technically, you know, the show is basically supposed to be like a documentary for one of those, for a PBS, okay? And so she's opening up. She's in her little, you know, area where she gets a chance to just go ahead and just let it all hang out. And next thing you know, Jim comes in with this, you know, expensive hot haircut. You know, he's looking good, he's looking tasty. He comes in, hey Pam, you wanna go out to dinner? And catches Pam off guard. She says yes, and then these tears, very real tears, because I loved it. She said sure, and she was so happy, and she didn't know what to say afterwards. I lived for that moment. I loved that moment. That was my favorite moment out of the whole season. I'm lying to you. They were all my favorite moments. Every moment in that season where Pam took action and where Jim became closer to Pam made it 10 times more real for me. And it made them 10 times more closer, a million times more closer than what they would have been if they would have just went into the relationship, because it built up the anticipation, but it also made them realize that at any moment anything could happen and they need to take it. Carpe diem, seize the moment. And that's why I love that moment. That is one of my favorite moments in The Office. Also, the letter in the tea kettle moment. Also, at the end of the show, when he gives her the letter that he hid from her that was in the tea kettle. God, Angela getting with Dwight. That was one of my favorite moments. Like, finally them getting back together. Angela falling back in love with Dwight and Dwight not wanting her. You know, it was just epic because it makes you realize that human spirit and determination in real life, if you keep being persistent, you can get somewhere. And I'm not gonna lie, that's why I love this show. That's why I'm so in love with this show, because it's about business, it's about being an entrepreneur, it's about love, it's about hate, it's about life, it's about perseverance, and it's funny as hell. And it's corny, just like me. Like, that's why it's one of my favorite shows. You've got to watch it. Like, if you're not a Netflix member, go get it. You don't have to buy the hugest package on Netflix, but freaking go get it. Go on Netflix. Go on Sling. Go on PlayStation View. Get The Office. Get the DVD. Go on eBay. Stream it. I would suggest you stream it first. Stream it about 100 times. Go buy the DVDs off of eBay, Amazon, whatever. But stream it first, because there's a very real feeling when you're streaming it. It is. When that next episode comes, and you don't have to go and open a package for a DVD, you just go ahead and stream it. It's a very real feeling that when it keeps coming and going, and just stream it, okay? Just watch this TV show, watch it unfold, and then go and research the different clips. I want you to go buy the DVDs, go get the, watch the clips, listen, really get into this show. Understand that this show could happen to anyone. I mean, if you've ever worked before or been in a tight group where you've grown over years, over time, and you became family, and then at some point you guys, like a lot of you, branched off into different worlds, but you still kept in contact, that's what this show means to me. This show reminds me of when I first started working. My third job was McDonald's. McDonald's on Trenton Road in Brownsville, New Jersey. And I was tight with those people. I worked there for like a year. I transferred to another McDonald's. And believe it or not, I was tight with those people at that McDonald's too. But never as tight as I was at that Browns Mills on Trenton Road. I love that place. And this show takes me back to that place. It takes me back to working the first time I worked in an office environment. It takes me back to the first time I ever worked at AT&T, when I worked at a lot of places where I got a chance to really let myself loose. And so I really want you to watch this show. Get on Netflix and watch this show right away, right now. Stop what you're doing. Don't stop listening to me though. Just get on Netflix, finish listening to me while you're getting on Netflix, have it ready, and then when you get off, watch it. Stream it all weekend. All weekend. It may be like a 3 or 4 dayer. It may take you a week to watch, because 9 seasons of intensely packed, funny as hell, comedy, so good for your soul. Watch it. Okay? I need you to watch this show. Please. And then we will talk about this in the group on Facebook when you get done. Okay? Holler at me. Hit me up in the comment section on my It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia Facebook page. I live for your feedback. I love your comments. Give me suggestions. And guess what? I'm listening. I'm watching. Smooches.